Maybe they could draft both guys named Bay, and then they could have the Bay Bays.
The Bay Bay Bays.
Hey, Bay Bay.
Beyblade. Yeah, I don't know.
What's up, guys? Welcome to Birdwatch. I'm Christian Clark, the Pelicans beat writer for NOLA.com and The Advocate, here today with Jeff Nowak.
Hey, yo.
And special guest, Schmidt Duo of Bourbon Street Shots. How are you doing today, man?
What's up, y'all? I'm very excited to be on this pod. We've been kind of chatting about it for a little bit, but glad we can make this happen.
Yeah, man, there is a lot going on in Pelicans land. I mean, just next week, you're going to have the trade moratorium lifted probably a few days before the draft. You're going to have the draft itself on Wednesday. And then 2 days after that, you're going to have free agency. It's all happening. I mean, I'm just thinking of the gif of that guy waving his hands with the rainbow in the background. It's all happening, finally.
Well, and I do think this is the first pod we've done since they set the schedule for the season. So we should, like, why don't we just go through that a little bit? Because they did set a start date.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be December 22nd. It's 72 games. I think, you know, the teams and the front offices weren't necessarily thrilled about, you know, such an abrupt and quick start date. I think this was something that was kind of coming from the television partners. But here we go. It's like, I feel like all these front offices are like, well, I guess we've got to, like, reshape our entire rosters in 2 weeks before the start of training camp. Like, it just kind of got thrust on them. But yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, the way I chose to look at it when they announced it was basically the NBA season ended in, like, week five of the NFL season, and the 2020-2021 season is going to start in, like, week 16.
Yeah, I mean, it's just was such a weird situation because eight of these teams have been, like, doing nothing since March, and then eight more have been doing nothing since, like, I don't know, late September or whenever it was, when, you know, I guess the start of August when the cutoff date was, the Pelicans are among them. And then a couple of other teams are going to get 71 days in between, you know, the end of the finals and the start of next season.
Yeah. I mean, if you're the Hornets, how long has it been? Like
at least 2 years. I mean, at least. Do you even know how to play basketball at this point? Like, what is the training camp?
The closest thing they got was the Jordan doc.
Yeah, I mean, I think Terry Rozier
no
is
longer
like,
scary, Terry.
Yeah, I think Terry Rozier is like 32 years old now or something. Yeah, how many years of Terry Rozier's prime are left now? Just kidding.
How many years were there to begin with?
Yes. That's a good question.
I love me. I have a scary Terry shirt, by the way. I think it's important that y'all know that because I grew up in New England and I'm a Celtics fan. The Drew Bledsoe moment is one of my favorite sports moments of all time when he called Eric Bledsoe Drew Bledsoe. And
he's got a pretty underrated Twitter feed.
Oh, he's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he got through the Louisville thing like right before they got in trouble for getting the recruit strippers and hookers and stuff. So he had that. He had a good time. Anyway, we've got off track a lot here.
Yeah, that was like a real, like, he got game plot point in real life or something like that. But we don't have to go down that road. We're going to talk a lot of draft on today's show. But first, I wanted to get to some of the Jrue Holiday stuff. Schmidt, do you think it's fair to say a Jrue Holiday deal is imminent? Is that, like, the correct word to describe this situation?
Yeah, it kind of feels like all of the information is pointing in that direction. I know Griff came out and said, yeah, we'll do our due diligence and there's no reason Jrue can't be part of our future plan. But I really think that at this point, given the number of teams that might be interested, given the number of reports that have come out, it seems that they're nearing the final stages. And frankly, if I were them, I'd want this wrapped up before the draft starts, or at least on draft day, because I want to know where I'm picking. I want to know what kind of picks I'm getting. I want to know what I can do with those picks. You know, let's say I get a pick later on in the draft. Can I combine that with the 13th pick and move up? Who knows? But I would want clarity on those answers and clarity where my roster stands before heading into this very brief free agency period. They're not going to have much time to make decisions. So if it's going to happen, it's going to happen very quickly.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, Griff's comments during the virtual Q&A with fans last week. He was asked just about the Jrue Holiday trade rumors, and you know, I thought he gave a pretty different answer, you know, as opposed to when he was asked that in December. You know, he pushed back really hard in those months leading up to the trade deadline, you know, even though I think they were doing their due diligence to some degree. But I thought his comments, you know, last week, you know, I think they suggested a lot more that, like, yeah, we're really thinking big picture here, and we're thinking, you know, long term. And really our main goal here is we're trying to compete for championships, and our two main guys are Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram, and we're, you know, going to do whatever we have to do to make that happen. You know, he's used the phrase sustainable future a lot. I think he used it at the Stan Van Gundy presser, and then again last week. Sustainable future is the kind of the phrase he keeps going back to. And, you know, I think what that means is, like, we're taking the long view here. You know, whether that means, like, an extension that both sides could be happy on, or, you know, a move that you have to make.
Yeah, the interesting thing is going to be the timing of whatever ends up happening, whether they do trade Jrue Holiday or they make, you know, they could make a trade that has nothing to do with Jrue Holiday. And that's another thing to keep in mind, because the Pelicans have all the assets. They can be as maneuverable as they want to be. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if you see a Jrue Holiday trade, just like last year, where you see a Jrue Holiday trade before the draft. And that's really just to get the assets in place so they can make a draft day trade. Last year, they had the four, which they picked up for Anthony Davis, and they moved it to the Hawks. And they got, what, the 8 and the 17, I think? I know it was the 8. I can't remember if it was the 17 or not. They took Jackson Hayes and Nikhil Alexander-Walker. And when you say, like, yeah, I think it should happen quickly, I think that's why. Because if they make a trade for Jrue Holiday, I almost would guarantee that there's a second trade coming, because you're picking up assets so that you can, you know, go up and get the guy that you can't get at 13, because this is the player you've identified and you want to be able to go up and get him.
Yeah, I mean, I think any trade you're making with Jrue, you're not going to be able to fix all the problems on your roster, you know? So it's really about how you're setting yourself up for that next move, and whether that's the draft day trade or whether it's a trade a year or two down the line based on the assets you got over the next couple of weeks, and you're swinging for the fences for the next star that becomes available. It's really, I think, how well you're positioning yourself for the next move. And that's how I'm going to evaluate any potential trade that comes back. You know, I think a lot of people are going to want to look at, like, oh, well, you know, this player doesn't really fit very well now, or, you know, they aren't that great. We expected a higher tier level player, et cetera, et cetera, which is fine. And, you know, those are probably going to be valid criticisms. But I think any Jrue Holiday trade has to take a more longer term approach in how it sets you up.
I kind of wonder how this new playoff format that it looks like we're getting has, like, tilted the odds possibly ever so slightly of a Jrue Holiday trade happening. And what I mean by that is that it's looking increasingly likely that this upcoming season there's going to be a play-in tournament for that last spot. 7 and 8 will play one game, and then 9 and 10 will play a game. And then the winners of those two games will play for the, I guess, the number, or the loser of the 7 and 8 and the winner of the 9 and 10 will play for the number 8 spot in the Western Conference. Like, you know, say the Pelicans are in, like, 10th or 11th place, like, they're still going to be interesting and compelling. And, like, I wonder if that factored into the decision ever so slightly of, like, we can still be, like, be in competition for a playoff spot, you know, even if we do decide to move Jrue.
Yeah, I actually hadn't even thought about it from that perspective. With the play-in tournament happening, that makes a lot of sense that, you know, you're wiggle room to try to compete for these spots is increased because of this play-in tournament. But at the same time, you know, there's other teams that are looking at it the same way, right? You have the Phoenix Suns, who may trade for Chris Paul, and they did pretty well in the bubble. They went 8-0, and they were one of the hottest teams at the in Orlando. If they add a high-level player like Chris Paul, where does that put them? At least in the Pelicans tier, if not higher, you know? So there's going to be teams competing for those last few spots. Golden State's going to be back, and they're going to be probably making a move with their number two pick to get even more players that can contribute for even a championship run. And it's going to be difficult to earn a playoff spot outright, but I see no reason why they can't compete for those the tourney spots that might happen at the end of the season.
Yeah. Mark Stein reported today that the Hawks emerge as a potential trade destination for Jrue Holiday. That would involve the number 6 pick, which Atlanta owns the rights to. What would you just think about, like, a potential return where, you know, the 6 pick is a prominent part of that package? Like, what do you just think about a potential return on that? And then I guess we can get to, like, does that actually, like, work for Jrue, and does that make sense for the Hawks to do that when you might only get him for 1 year?
Yeah, so I think the hang-up with the Hawks is, does Jrue want to opt in or extend and stay longer than 1 year? He's 30 years old. He does help them a lot this year. They're very, very desperate to make the playoffs. So it makes sense why they're pursuing him. Does it make sense to give up assets for a guy that's only going to be there 1 year? And that's kind of the question they have to grapple with. If Jrue decides he wants to opt in or take their money, I'm pretty confident Atlanta is going to give up a good amount of things to make that happen. But I think that scenario is extremely unlikely. And so I'd be shocked if it's anything more than, say, the 6th pick in Kevin Huerter, which I think is a good deal in the sense that you get a young asset, a young player, a top pick, and you get a bunch of cap space. But again, the driving factor here is Jrue going to stay in Atlanta, which seems unlikely. It really does. But crazy things have happened.
Wait, so you're telling me that you don't think Trae Young is available?
Yeah, you know, people say he's like the worst defender in the league, so I'm sure his value is terrible, and maybe they can swing it. You know, best defender for the worst defender. Good trade.
Yeah, they're trying to get out from that Trae Young experience.
Right? Yeah, he signed with Rich Paul, and you know, no one wants to deal with the whole clutch thing.
Yeah, the guy who intrigues me from the Hawks is would be Dwayne Dedman if they could throw him in a trade. He makes more money, and he doesn't make sense on that roster anymore. I think he makes $13 million a year. He would fit what the Pelicans need from that center position. He can knock down threes. I think if that's the guy I would look for if the Pelicans are making a trade there, and if they can jump up to 6 and find a way to get Dedman and kind of add that flexibility contract wise, I think that would be a good get for them, in my opinion. But
would you do Dedman and 6 straight up for Jrue?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's a big jump. That basically means that you get your pick of, you know, guys like Obi Toppin, you know, any of those guys in the top half of the lottery. You all of a sudden get that flexibility. And I think that's a no-brainer if they're willing to do that straight up. And you're not including the 13.
No, I'm not.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, all day I would do that.
Interesting.
I don't think the Hawks would do that.
Maybe. I don't know. I feel like I'm a little bit lower on Dedman than you are, especially with how he performed in Sacramento last year. I don't necessarily buy him as an asset. I do think he can fill those spot minutes as starter at the center, but you know, your competition is a 12-year-old Jaxson Hayes and Jahlil Okafor, maybe, you know?
Like, I don't think he's the best option at center. Right. I think they draft a center. You know, they probably bring in another young center or sign a guy, but he's a 1-year rental that saves you from having to overpay Derek Favors.
No, I agree. I mean, that's interesting. I don't know if I would pull the trade on that, but it's definitely worth considering, especially if you love a guy at 6.
Right. So let's talk about the 6 pick. I mean, Schmidt, I think you just laid out the reasons pretty clearly why it's probably unlikely that you see something between New Orleans, Atlanta, at least straight up involving Jrue. I mean, like, I'm just saying hypothetically, like, if I'm Jrue Holiday, you know, I'm 11 years in, like, I don't want to be locked into that situation. Like, I just saw one of my best friends in the league, Anthony Davis, like, get traded and be like a complimentary star and go win a title. Like, that's what I would be thinking about, but I'm just hypothetically speaking there. But let's have the discussion about 6. I mean, are there like guys you would really want on this roster at that position? I know you're pretty high on Killian Hayes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I have Killian Hayes number 1 overall on my board, and so if he fell to 6 and the Pelicans had an opportunity to draft him, I'd be happy. I have no idea if they view him the same way at all. You know, I have no idea what they think of his upside. I think he's probably the most complete guard in this draft and has the ability to score on all three levels, facilitate at a high level, and I think he's a much better defender than people realize. And so I think that's a great get to put next to Zion and Brandon Ingram for the future. I wouldn't be surprised if the Pelicans are also interested in guys like Pat Williams, who's been a hot name recently. He's a versatile 6'8 forward who, you know, he can protect the rim, he can generate steals, he can defend multiple positions, and I think he has a fair bit of creation upside. He can. A lot of people are attracted to the possibility of him turning into more than just your typical 3-and-D forward. You know, kind of a do-it-all player. And then there's Denny Avdija, who is mocked pretty highly on a lot of boards. He may, you know, I've seen him as high as 2, and maybe he falls to 6. I think the Pelicans would be interested in a versatile forward. I think optionality and versatility have been the buzzwords for all of Griff's career, even dating back to Cleveland. And so I wouldn't be surprised if that's the mold of players he's pursuing. But you never know who slips. You know, you never know who slides. So does Anthony Edwards slide? Maybe. You know, does LaMelo Ball slide? Maybe. Does Onyeka Okongwu slide? Maybe. You know, I think at 6, you have the opportunity to get a guy you really, really like or luck into someone that's sliding. And so it doesn't surprise me the Pelicans are exploring those options, because theoretically, if Zion and Brandon Ingram are good enough, it's going to be a very long time before you're picking as high as 6 or even 13, and you have an opportunity to add a high-level lottery talent. And so maybe the Pelicans see this as their one chance to really add that core piece, and then, you know, you stop worrying about picks going forward.
I will say, you know, obviously Stan Van is not doing player personnel with the Pelicans. He's just coaching. But I think this year, more than any other, you're going to see what he wants kind of jump to the forefront, whereas in other years, Griffin might overrule him just because he's coming in and this he wants to create his, you know, vision of the system. And, you know, I think that first year where you were like, you know, if you give me the right guys, I can win games, you know, and you can make that pitch and land. You just have to follow through on it. But I can see that working. And so what I did earlier today was I kind of went through all the Pistons picks. Because I think because he was in charge of player personnel, that's a really good example of who he targets in the draft. And I found a really weird split in the guys, which let me pull it up here.
Were any of them even good? I don't think he was a great drafter.
No, he was not. Andre Drummond, KCP got drafted before he got there. So he was there 2014 to 2018. So if you look at those drafts, they didn't have a first rounder in 2014. They took Spencer Dinwiddie, so that was a good pick. But it's tough to really gauge because it was a second round dart throw that worked. And he didn't work until he got to Brooklyn anyway. 2015, Stanley Johnson. not a great pick.
Yikes.
But I think it does tell you like the type of player that he goes after, because Spencer didn't, you know, these big guards. The next year, Henry Ellenson, who is a Marquette center, who's really hasn't had any impact.
He was supposed to be the next Kevin Love, remember?
Right, right. the next year, which I think is telling in terms of who he might attack in this draft based on the Pelicans' needs, Luke Kennard. That is a good pick. And I think it is the type of player that I could see him going after, just a guy who can shoot from the logo. And just is going to have a green light at all times, and it's going to get tutored by JJ Redick. You know, I could see that. Then Bruce Brown was the next year. Again, they didn't have a first round pick, but I think you're going to see Stan Van Gundy target shooting and rebounds if he gets his say in this draft, is kind of where I'm going with that.
Yeah. I mean, I would be very surprised if he has like a lot of input on who he picked. I mean, he was asked like directly, you know, about like, you know, being in charge of personnel and then coaching and then just coming back to like just being in a coach role. And he joked at his introductory presser, like, yeah, Griff asked me about like some draft prospect and I started like shaking and sweating. So I would be shocked if he gets a lot of input. But yeah,
was that because he was nervous or does he just shake and sweat?
I think he got like some bad flashbacks probably. that's a pretty tough draft record. I just wanted to stay on six before we move to 13. Like if they were able to get up there somewhere. I mean, Pat Williams, I think, is interesting. Like if he hits, I've heard one of the comps that I kind of like is like a little more athletic, Paul Millsap. What do you think about that?
I like that. I had actually, the two comps that I made for him were, you know, a defensive Harrison Barnes or a defensive Tobias Harris. And so, you know, those combo forwards that can create on the ball, can isolate, can score in a multitude of different ways. You know, can run the pick and roll if they want to. But I think Pat Williams makes his money on the defensive end more so than those guys. So if you can have that kind of scoring upside and be a positive defensive player, that's a solid draft pick. And that's the type of player that every team is looking for.
I like Okongwu a lot. I think, you know, he's just a really solid player and has a chance. Like anywhere he goes, I think he's just got a chance to be a productive NBA player. I like Avdija, but not really for this roster. Kind of my one take on like who, you know, me, Christian Clark, the armchair GM, thinks the Pelicans should take is I'm cool with like a lot of different types of players, but I don't know that they should take anybody who they don't feel can improve as a shooter. And like when I look at Avdija's like free throw numbers and like, you know, guys who not only didn't really make 3-point shots, but like were very poor free throw shooters. I just have a lot of hesitancy about that. I mean, I think like this team's pathway to success, like obviously it's more complicated than just surrounding Zion with shooters. But like when Zion is your best player, like I think it's pretty important for a lot of other guys to just be able to make shots around him. So I at least kind of want to swing on like somebody who I think can like, you know, become an above average shooter.
Then you don't want Precious Achiuwa, I'll tell you that. He's like the one prospect in the top half of the draft that I'm just like, I would put money on it right now that he's going to bust. He's just not an NBA player.
Wow.
I've watched him too much. I've watched too much of him because I'm a UConn fan and I, you know, banged my head against the wall of the American Athletic Conference for the last 3 years. And he's just, you know, he can't shoot. He's just a, I don't know.
You don't think he'd be like a small ball five type thing in the NBA? A Montrezl Harrell type.
If you want to say he has the type of energy that could be a Montrezl Harrell type, sure. But I don't see that. I mean, it takes a real special type of human being to have that type of energy. Like even DeJuan Blair was a good example of a guy who never was a shooter, but like he just had that innate ability to play undersized and play well. And he's basically a Zion Williamson who doesn't do the things that Zion Williamson does that make him great.
Okay, but sense. Is Zion doing the things that Zion does to make him great anymore? I feel like Zion is quite a bit of ways from being Zion. That's a conversation.
You're selling your Zion stock?
I'm not selling any Zion stock. I've gotten pretty pessimistic.
Let's not use Zion Williamson and Precious Achiuwa in the same sentence.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Yeah.
You're right. Precious is taller.
Stop it. Don't do this.
Wingspan.
It's not funny.
Can't jump this high though.
Yeah.
Anyway, no. He's like the one prospect I can see in this list that if they settled on him, I would just throw a rock at a wall. Anyway,
makes sense. I mean, I think you know you could probably go get Paul Reed in the second round, who I think is a comparable player. He's a little bit older than Precious, right? But I think he'll do a lot of the same stuff. And it's the second round. You're not, you know, wasting a first round ticket.
There's a couple guys in the second round that I think are really interesting. I think Nate Hinton is a really interesting prospect. Another guy I've watched too much of, again, with the American Athletic Conference.
He can really rebound.
Yeah, and he can shoot. And he's just, he reminds me of the Villanova players that just constantly get, you know, just chucked into the NBA. And just
the Josh Harts of the world.
Right. Josh Hart. What's his name on Golden State? I'm blanking. Rookie
Pascal,
yes, but yeah, I mean, he's just that type of guy. Jordan Noir is another guy who these are just NBA ready players that you know I think the Pelicans could benefit from. Trey Jones, another guy to fill that Duke void that we have.
No, but if we're going Duke, I want Cassius Stanley, just because you know he's a 6'6 jump through, he broke Zion's vertical leap record at Duke, so. you know, if we want to go throw a dart at the Duke board, let's go get that guy who can jump out the gym and is your prototypical wing size, and we'll just have fun with him. Maybe he turns out to be absolutely nothing in the NBA, or maybe he looks really, really good when Lonzo is throwing him 70 feet lobs.
There's some big guys at the back of the draft too that could be interesting. You have Nick Richards, who a lot of people have down at the end of the second round. I'm surprised by that after watching him play this year. Vernon Carey is another guy, another Duke guy. I think, you know, this is a year where I think second round picks are actually intriguing, whereas most years I look at the board and I'm just like, what do you take? But
well, you know who has 39 and 42.
For now.
And 60, right? And
for
60.
Now.
Yeah.
And Mr. Irrelevant.
But yeah, Christian, you wanted to talk about 13. We just kind of got lost in the weeds with the second round stuff. Who are you looking at 13, man? Like, what do you feel like the pulse is with the Pelicans?
I made a list of five guys here who I think could be a fit, and I just wanted to go down it and get your thoughts. I think the first one, watched a couple of his games earlier this week. Kyra Lewis Jr. out of Alabama. He's a sophomore, but like age-wise, he might as well be a freshman. Like, he was 17 years old, you know, playing in the SEC as a freshman, which is pretty mind-blowing. But the end-to-end speed is like frightening. Like, he is a human blur, probably the fastest player in the draft end-to-end. Like, the burst is pretty incredible. I mean, I think, you know, playmaking, decision making, it's not like bad, but it could be better. And I think the shot is fine, but not great. But like, I just think he would give the Pelicans an element of like speed and like creation in the half court, particularly in pick and rolls, that like they're kind of missing right now.
I love Kyra. I have him like 6 or 7 on my personal board. I think he's fantastic. I wouldn't be surprised if he turns out better than some of the guards mocked to go in the top three. I just think he's, like, for the reasons you mentioned, is a really solid player, and I think his shot is better than people know. If you look at his shot chart and you look at his off the dribble shooting numbers, they were pretty impressive. And he was scoring at all three levels. He can get better at finishing at the rim, especially given his tools, and I think that was a product of him being like 160 pounds. And the reports have come out that he's up to like 180 or something. I don't know. He's put on some weight, you know, muscle watch season, whatever. But, you know, he's been working out. He's been getting stronger. And I don't think the frame of somebody should be a knock as a draft prospect, especially when they're 18, 19 years old. You know, they're gonna fill out. They're going to grow in. And, you know, even Ingram is filling out. He's a beanpole still, but, you know, they all put on weight. And so I'm really optimistic on him. I have heard that the Phoenix Suns are just hot on him, and I'd be shocked if he makes it past them at 10. That seems to be the buzz going around.
Him and Booker together, I think, would be really interesting. I mean, right. That makes sense. But, like, I think, you know, him and Lonzo, I think that's something that could work. I mean, Stan Van Gundy's already talked about the idea of, like, you know, Lonzo's kind of the guy who handles the ball for us in transition situations. And, like, he's this brilliant open court playmaker. Like, we're not going to take that away from him. Obviously, you know, Lonzo, there's something kind of lacking in half court creation right now. Like, he doesn't really get to the rim. He doesn't finish a lot at the rim. He doesn't get to the line. Like, Kyra could give you some of that in the half court. And, like, I think he'd be perfectly fine, like, filling the lane in transition and, like, playing fast. I think Alabama played at the fourth fastest pace in college basketball last season.
Yeah, Alabama was a very modernized system. They spaced the floor out for him really well. They're paying that pace and space stuff, shooting threes. So it was a really good fit for him, and you kind of get an idea of what he'll look like in the NBA, especially with NBA-level athletes and NBA-level playmakers. So I'm excited. You might create the best transition team, at least the best young transition team, between him, Zion, Lonzo. You know, that's a team that's going to beat up people in transition.
Yeah, playing fast was kind of, you know, a hallmark of Alvin Gentry, and we associate that with him. But, like, I still think the Pelicans want to play that way. I think they understand that that, you know, Zion is incredibly gifted in transition situations, and Lonzo is a player who's really suited to doing that too. And even Brandon Ingram is, you know, probably even like underrated as a transition player. So I think they understand like that can continue to be a strength of this roster. And I think I agree with them. So I think, you know, continuing to play that way to some extent makes sense. I think, you know, kind of the problem with Alvin Gentry was playing fast was always the solution to the problem, which wasn't the case.
Can't get a shot, play faster.
Yeah.
Right. It was a crutch to not actually play basketball a lot of the time. To me, a lot of the decision making, I think, goes back to how does David Griffin and, you know, the coaching staff feel about Nickeil Alexander-Walker? Because if you think that he's a guy you project to be your starting two, whether this year or next year, then, you know, you might approach this draft a little differently. If you don't think that if you've watched him play for a year and you don't think that he's going to project to be anything more than, you know, a rotation player, you probably have to go find a two in this draft. And I think Christian, we talked about this a while ago, and you were high on Devin Vassell, and I still think that he's a really interesting target if they stay at 13.
So Vassell is another guy who I think will probably not be there at 13. I mean, if I had to bet on it, like I bet he's off the board. But yeah, I mean, I think he's a really interesting target there. I mean, I think probably his greatest skill is team defense right now. Like that's what I see the most when I have turned on like limited tape of him, is like he's a great help side defender and he's very aware of like where all five offensive players are on the floor, and he's got pretty good instincts and can come over and like get you a steal, and he can block some shots, and he's pretty good on ball defender too. You know, he shot above 40% from three in both of his seasons at Florida State. There was like a weird Twitter video of him shooting with some really funky form. I don't know what to make of that. I don't know what to make of like Twitter videos, but
they say he was just joking around. Okay.
Classic lie, but yeah.
The video got scrubbed from the internet really quickly. Like the agents blew that up. They're like, nope, get that off.
I never saw this. What, when you say funky form, what are we talking about? Was it like Markel Fultz at the free
throw
line?
Trebuchet from 1850.
Like Rashard Lewis, kind of?
Yeah, like way, way behind his head.
Like that.
You remember Rashard Lewis? He had like the highest release. He would have both his hands like above his head. That's what I'm imagining.
Yeah, it was like an ugly cousin of Rashard Lewis's form, basically. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of like that, like way behind the head. I mean, you know, his like traditional shot mechanics, like I don't think they're necessarily beautiful, but like he's got a high release and like it was pretty compact and repeatable. So yeah, I don't know why he changed it, but yeah, I mean, I think he would be a really good pick. I mean, I've kind of got three, I guess, like 3-and-D forwards, or just like three forwards on my list who have the ability to knock down the three ball. This is like, I don't think it's that, I don't know, it might be a little controversial, but if I was the Pelicans, I think I would almost rather have Aaron Nesmith from Vanderbilt than Vassell, just because like the one thing that he's great at, three-point shooting, is the most important thing in the entire league. And like, his ability to like make threes off of movement from a standstill, I mean, just incredible range. I just really believe in it. Like, I just want one guy in this team who is a great three-point shooter. I would love to see what that looks like next to Zion, who I think is going to be a really good passer.
Yeah, I mean, I think as good as JJ is, it'd be cool to have someone who's better on the defensive end. And going to be there for a little bit longer term than JJ, who, in fairness, while being very good at his age, probably doesn't have much longer left on the Pelicans and maybe even the league. So I agree with that. I did want to push back a little bit on Jeff's point about drafting a two. I really think at this stage, like, they need to make the talent play. Just go get who they think is the best player available. I don't think there's anyone on their roster that is good enough to where they can be like, yeah, we have this position set, so we're going to go in a different direction. I mean, obviously you want to say the positions with Zion and Ingram are set, but I think if you draft forwards, the beauty of them is that you can play them with other forwards. You know, it's multi-positional. You can all play them at the same time. But with regards to like drafting a specific player, I'd be very upset if they made a decision based off of Nickeil Alexander-Walker. I mean, and that's no disrespect to Nickeil. I'd just be very upset if they were like, oh, we got Nickeil and we're going to go in a different direction. I just hope whoever they have zeroed in on, they pursue. And I agree with Christian. Neesmith is a tantalizing prospect in that regard. And if his shooting is real, then watch out, because that's the type of player that really opens things up for Zion and Ingram.
That's fair. And I typically don't look at the numerical positions. I subscribe to the Brad Stevens philosophy of ball handlers, wings, and bigs. But I definitely see what you're saying. I don't think they should bypass the prospect because they really want two guard. But I just think as you're trying to narrow down a lot of really tight races between these prospects, one of the things that is going to be really interesting here is the evaluation. Normally, you would have conference tournaments, the NCAA tournament, all of these high-pressure environments where you can kind of get an idea, at least from a mindset perspective, a lot of these players. You don't have that. You haven't seen these players play since March. A lot of these guys didn't play in major conferences. You didn't really get to see how they stacked up. A guy like Obi Toppin, you never saw him play a premier team, at least not, you know, outside of maybe a preseason tournament, which you shouldn't really put a lot of stock in. So it's going to be interesting to see how teams kind of bridge that gap and separate prospect A from prospect B without having half of the time that they would normally be to put tape down and evaluate.
Yeah, I mean, Nickeil played less than 600 minutes as a rookie. I mean, I would have to like go through and look, but like I would imagine like a lot of that was just garbage time or pretty inconsequential to him. It's just too early to tell like what you have in him or like pencil him in as like the starter at shooting guard or anything like that, especially if you're like, you know, a team that at least wants to like compete for one of those play-in spots. The last 3-and-D kind of forward I have on my list here, I think could potentially be a target at 13, is Sadiq Bey, Villanova guy. He went to the same high school as Josh Hart, which I didn't know until today. Obviously went to the same college. He did a media availability today, and I was like, oh, how well do you know Josh? Like, is he giving you advice and like, you know, kind of how to make it in the league? He's like, oh, a little bit, but not that much. So I guess, you know, you can go to the same high school and the same college and just not know each other that well. But, you know, I think of Sadiq Bey as like, you know, kind of a classic Villanova guy. Like, he's got a nice 3-point shot. He's going to do a lot of the little things. I like him. I don't know that I necessarily love him. Like, just the athleticism like isn't there, and
he's a little ground bound.
Yeah, he's not like, I just don't think he's like the knockdown, you know, flamethrower 3-point shooter is Neesmith is, and like if that's not going for him, then I guess I would just worry about him.
Right.
Yeah, I would just worry about him if that doesn't go right for him, I would say. But I still, you know, like him.
The comp I see here is Sam Decker, which isn't super inspiring, but Sam Decker was a good prospect too. He just didn't pan out.
Yeah. I'm a bit lower on Sadiq Bey. And again, like, I think if the Pelicans are taking the approach of where we need to fit a certain mold of player and that's why they're going after Sadiq Bey, I think procedurally that's a mistake. If they really love him and their intel is great and their workout was great or whatever, fine. You know, I'm okay with that. But if it's like, we really need this 3-and-D guy, he kind of looks like one, let's go get him, I'd be upset. That being said, you know, there's another wing who isn't mocked to go high as 13, but I feel like could be a top 13 player, if not higher overall, when it's all said and done. I really like Josh Green. And Josh Green, he played at Arizona, and he is a 6'6 wing, about the same size as Isaac Okoro. And I feel like he is 1A or 1B in terms of the best defensive players in this draft. You know, people talk about Okoro being one of the better defensive players, Vassell. I think Green is right up there with them and those guys. He also is pretty creative with his passing. He didn't really have a lot of on-ball responsibilities. Nico Mannion took a lot of them. But you can see that he's a really good connect-the-dots type player, especially in transition. Super athletic and jump out the gym. And his defensive footwork is amazing. He switches hips extremely fast. Can guard up and down positions if you need him to. So, again, intriguing prospect. I like the upside of him. You know, it's difficult to throw comps around, but you could see a world where if everything breaks right for him, he turns into a Jaylen Brown type player, you know? And the three-point shooting is going to be a swing skill. He shot around 35%. Not great, not fantastic. His footwork on his shots needs some work. It's not consistent, but I think it's workable. I think it's more workable than Isaac Okoro's shot. And so I think he's kind of one of those sleepers in plain sight. And if he ends up on a good team, let's say Boston has a million picks, and that's kind of the prototype of player they go after. I think he has a chance to really surprise people. And I wouldn't mind if the Pelicans made a pick like Josh Green at 13.
I was going to say Kelly Oubre is...
That's a good one.
Because he's Jaylen Brown is a bit bigger. That's what, you know, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, what makes them so difficult to play is they're guards that have the size of a forward, but they can shoot like a guard. Josh Green's listed at 6'5", 200. It's a little closer to the two-guard range than that frame. I think Jaylen Brown's 6'8", but I agree with that. The one thing for me is, you know, whatever prospect you think is the guy.
Brown's 6'6", and that's in shoes.
Is he 6'6"?
Yes.
Man.
Yeah, so
he plays a lot bigger than 6'6".
So, I mean, yeah, I think Josh Green is around the same size. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, I think it's the athleticism that really sets you apart. But I don't think they're too different in terms of size.
No, and Jaylen Brown didn't come into the league able to shoot. He developed that.
Right.
For me, the thing is you have all these, you know, as you approach this draft, the one thing for me, you know, the Pelicans can't do is just – let the draft come to them. They need to identify the guy they want and they need to go get him, because I don't care who you draft, honestly, as long as you are committed to that pick, as long as you did your scouting and you see a guy at 8, you want to go get him, you find a way to go get him. It's what has made the Saints so excellent at drafting is, and you know, there's a lot of influence in terms of the, you know, front office staff from the Saints side to the Pelican side, or at least there has been. They share a building and they need to be able to pick their prospect and go get them wherever they need to go get them. And they've set up themselves to be able to do that as well as anybody in the league. So I think that's more than anything else. I'd like to see them be committed to getting the guy they think is the guy. Whether they're right or not is a different question.
This is a quick tangent, but I feel like every year there's a guy who slips to the 20s, and then on draft night, I'm like, how the hell did this guy go in the 20s? Last year, that was Brandon Clark. I was like clearly this guy's going to be a good NBA player. My pick for this year's how the hell did that guy slip to the 20s is Desmond Bain, like from TCU. I feel like in a year, like we're just going to be sitting here and being like Desmond Bain was like one of the 10 best rookies last year. Like how did this guy fall? Even though there are like, you know, I know he's got a negative wingspan, but like he can just play. Like he knocked down threes for 4 years in a row. He's just good. Do you see that at all, Schmidt?
Yeah, you know, like a lot of draft Twitter is really high on Desmond Bane. I've seen people who I really respect as draft analysts call him the best shooter in the draft. You know, that high. I hate to say it, but like I don't see him being much more than like an Etwan Moore. That's just me. I think that there's a level of athleticism and speed in the NBA that's going to be difficult for him, and difficult for him to get those shots off, and difficult for him to get in the paint. And at his size, you know, I think he's like 6'4 with like a negative wingspan, like a 6'4 with like a 6'4 wingspan or 6'3 wingspan. It's not fantastic. I struggle to see him make a high level impact on both ends. I think he's an incredibly smart player. It's very possible he has a place in the league like Etwan Moore does for a very, very long time. And, you know, maybe I'm just overthinking it. Maybe, you know, he's just good and he's just going to be good. It's possible. But I feel like I'm one of the few people who sees Bane and thinks Etuan Moore. I don't know. I think the whole idea of like, oh, how did this guy slip to the 20s doesn't bother me that much, because typically when that's happening, it's an older upperclassman player with projected to be a limited ceiling type of guy. And maybe they come in and contribute, but the reason they're falling is potentially not public, like medicals. Heard that was kind of the case with Brandon Clark. His medicals weren't fantastic, and that's why teams were a little bit scared off. And while I think there is value to getting those guys that contribute right off the bat, you're going to get put in a position pretty quickly where you have to pay them a lot of money. And if you're a team like Memphis, or if you're a team maybe like New Orleans, who's not going to be ready to compete at that high of a level very quickly, you don't want to end up with a bloated cap sheet just because you drafted a rookie that hits immediately. You know, if you're a team like Boston and you have a guy like Grant Williams, and he's playing playoff minutes, that's huge. And Grant Williams is one where I'm like, you know, I was all in on the Grant Williams train last year. I was like, man, if the Pelicans could find a way, you know, I would have been fine drafting him at 17, where they drafted Nickeil Alexander-Walker. He's a solid player. So I think situationally it depends. I think it's awesome that Memphis got Brandon Clark. I'm interested to see what happens 3 years from now when he's up for an extension and where they are as a team. And you know, with players that are good early and young, you often find them staring down the barrel of a max or a near max. And I don't want to be in a position where I'm overpaying a good, not great guy. And, you know, I have the next Otto Porter where I've maxed him for 5 years or 4 years. And that just blows up my cap sheet and limits my flexibility.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think your pecking order is definitely, you know, Ja and Jaren Jackson Jr. there. But no, I definitely see your point. I wouldn't take Desmond Bane at 13 either. Or I'm not, you know, going out on that far of a limit. I just think there are better players there. Before we get out of here, I wanted to get you guys' take on one last guy who I've seen thrown around at 13 in a couple of mock drafts. He's a big, which it would be a little surprising to see the Pelicans go big in the lottery second year in a row. But Jalen Smith from Maryland, a guy who can knock down the three, even off movement sometimes, a guy who can be, you know, a rim protector to some degree. I mean, pretty stiff when it comes to, like, sliding his feet laterally. I kind of worry about him defending in the pick and roll. But what do you think about that fit in New Orleans?
Yeah, unfortunately, like, you know, I hate to sound like a party pooper throughout this whole process, but, you know, I feel like that's another one of those instances where people see, like, oh, what does New Orleans need? They need a stretch big. Well, who is kind of this stretch big that's coming up? Oh, it's Miles Turner via trade, or it's Jalen Smith via draft. And I think kind of trying to thrust this fit onto the roster is not a good decision-making process. And again, if they've done the homework and they really love the guy, I support them. I trust their decision. But if it's this idea of I'm drafting this guy for fit because this is what I think he can be, well, you know, I think you're putting yourself in a situation where you're passing up on a better player. And I think there are better players available at 13. And in fact, if we're kind of going for this big man who, if we're in a situation where you have 13 and you want to draft a big man who's skilled and can stretch the floor, maybe block some shots, it's Poku, in my opinion. I'm not going to let him drop all the way to 22 where Denver might grab him, because, you know, they love those players. but, you know, they got Bol Bol, who is, you know, a bag of tricks, and, you know, they have Jokic and MPJ, and, like, they're all four of those big skilled players that can do things. And so I want Poku. I have him pretty high up on my own draft board. And I think that's the guy the Pelicans really want to make a swing and hope this guy fits, because the ideal version of Poku is a 7-foot player who can protect the rim, he can play make, he can step outside, he can do all these things, and that's an excellent player to put next to Zion and Ingram.
For the uninitiated, can you give me Poku's full name?
Alexej Pokuševski.
There you go. That's the mouthful.
And he's playing in the Bulgarian third league right now. Is that right?
The Greek, yeah, something like that. Like the same league. It's the same league that Giannis played in that people like to say compared to like your local YMCA run.
Yeah, I mean, like I feel like if you join like a men's league in New Orleans, like the caliber of play in the league that he's playing in is like it's better. But I don't know. No, I'm just kidding, man. I think he's really interesting. I just don't know what to make of him. Like I just don't know how you evaluate a guy who's like that. I mean, he looks really fluid and he's huge and like he does a lot of daring stuff. But like I just don't know how to evaluate it with the guys he's playing against. But like you're right, like. We've seen it before where a guy has been like a superstar and he was playing against those caliber players. But I think it's really interesting, and I'm glad you brought him up. I didn't think we were getting through this podcast without you throwing in Poku there.
I had to. He's one of my, you know, like I feel like you don't get an opportunity to make a play, a talent play like that. And so what? If you blow a pick at 13, you're not setting your franchise back. You have a million picks coming up. You know, it's like you got enough young players anyway. Make that high upside play that, you know, if you're making swings and you make the safe pick, well, okay, you know, whatever, you made the safe pick, but the probability of that pick failing is equal to, I would say, is equal to the probability of Poku failing. I really do think that. And so the return on hitting on a guy like Poku is astronomically higher than, you know, return on hitting on Jalen Smith.
Do you guys remember the VeggieTales meme? Like, from this year when it was like Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson. Yeah. That's like the real VeggieTales meme is Zion Williamson and Poku, I think.
Oh my goodness. Or the Apple Jacks.
That was a good, yeah, that's the one I remember. They look like the Apple Jacks logo.
Yeah, Poku's like 195.
Maybe they could draft both guys named Bay and then they could have the Bay Bays.
The Bay Bays. The Bay Bay Bay.
Hey, Bay Bay.
Beyblade. Yeah, I don't know. I like the other Bay, too. I mean, I don't, you know, if Sadiq is falling.
They're not related, right?
No, no. Right. You know, if Sadiq is falling or the Pelicans get a pick in the 20s or something, I'm not upset if they make that, you know, pick at that range. 13th is a little bit is iffy for me. But, you know, and Tyler Bay in the second round, again, you know, you have a versatile forward who is athletic and rangy. So I don't think it hurts to make plays on guys like those.
Okay. Two Bays, you know, Poku, possibly making a long-term play. Schmidt, thank you for doing this. This was really fun. You are much more knowledgeable about the draft than me. I just started, like, cramming basically 2 weeks ago and, like, watching old games on YouTube. I did not watch that much college basketball this year. I'm going to try to change that this year and get in a little bit more. It's just a weird year. And, like, it was just hard to watch college basketball after I had Zion because it was just so fun. And then it was like, man, this is so disappointing.
Yeah,
compared
there
to
was
like,
no Zion or any player close. There was Duke had like three players that you would want to watch, and I don't know if there was three total players I would want to watch this past year.
It feels like there's 20 prospects that could fall within the top 15, but no prospects that would have been in the top three last year. Like. Who's going to be the top three? What would your guys' picks be for the top three if Minnesota, Golden State, Charlotte keeps those picks?
I guess it's the consensus, right? LaMelo, Anthony Edwards, and James Wiseman.
In that order?
I feel like Minnesota picks Edwards over LaMelo. But I don't know. Maybe not.
Right. But it could be the exact opposite, and it wouldn't be shocking in any way. That's kind of where I'm going with that.
Right.
Just it's a strange draft.
I wouldn't want to be a team with the top three pick this year. I'll just put it that
way. No, absolutely not. That's where, like, where Chicago's at.
Do you think Golden State keeps it?
No. No chance.
I don't think so either. Yeah.
No chance. I think the tax bill alone, just because they have the second pick salary slot, is enough for them to find a trade. To at least move down.
Yeah. So if you're a team that wants a 7-foot center, go get it. All right.
I think the Pelicans are at an interesting spot at 13. There's a chance they move up, but this next 2 weeks is going to be really fun. Appreciate you guys for listening this week, and we will be talking to you again next week.
Thanks, y'all.
Peace.